What makes Portland so green, such a pleasant place to live? For one thing, years ago, city leaders decided to limit the area Portland could cover. They set boundaries that prevented endless suburban sprawl, and it encouraged density near mass transit. Portland has one of the highest bicycle riderships in the country. They don't just use streetcars. Portland makes them to sell all over the nation, just part of the new green economy. There are things that will preserve your city or town. So let's tune in to Sam Adams, recorded April 24th in Vancouver.
Tonight, I'm going to show you some slides. I'm going to talk about some approaches that were taken in the city of Portland. I was sworn in on January 1st of this year. I was elected in the primary election. So I've had time, you know, to sort of work on an agenda. I'm working on a 100-day agenda as mayor of the city of Portland, the 55th mayor of the city of Portland. But tonight is really about sharing with you, and I look forward to the questions. And I'm really working to organize Portland to build, to learn the lessons that we need to learn to accept both the realities, but to be inspired and creative in our decision-making. And our organizing principle for Portland that is sort of on the table right now for discussion. As we look to put together the Portland Plan, which is the plan for Portland's next 25 years, is really around this concept of 20-minute neighborhoods connected by, you know, green and multimodal corridors that are intended to not just, you know, create sort of satisfaction, a deep level of satisfaction with Portlanders, but also to do well in terms of our impact on the on our climate, and create economic opportunities for more Portlanders and to create prosperity for more Portlanders. So the concept of 20-minute neighborhoods connected by green, multimodal networks, multimodal corridor, network of corridors. How many have been to Portland before? Oh, well, why am I up here? Crying out loud. All right. Well, this will be really good discussion then. This is Portland. It's a great city. You must come visit. We don't have a sales tax. Spend lots of money. Don't rent a car. We're working hard to make it possible to live in Portland and to visit Portland in a manner that you don't need a car. We're 143 square miles. We are surrounded by, I'll talk a little bit more in a minute, we're surrounded by an urban growth boundary. 70 miles of our 143 square miles are pervious pavement. And you see the redder it is, the more pervious pavement we have here. We are a city of six watersheds, and we're considered one of the most livable cities in the United States, one of the most environmental friendly cities in the United States, one of the environmental conscious cities in the United States, and yet our watersheds, we have six of them, all in terms of health, all get a failing grade. Part of the reason that we succeed, that we're rated number one, the number one most sustainable city consistently in the United States, is a couple of reasons. One, we've worked hard at it. Long before I was in positions of influence, a lot of other people worked hard at it. And back in the 70s with Senate Bill 100, we established a very robust definition of the common good. And by common good, it means that you don't get to do everything you want just because you own a piece of property, and that we were going to draw a line around ourselves and protect farm and forest land. So Portland and Oregon, Washington, Idaho has always been sort of this quirky city and a quirky part of the United States. We were simultaneously governed by Britain and the United States for 60 years. And if you're British, you followed British law. And if you were an American, you followed American law. And it didn't matter if you lived next door to each other. That's what you did. And a lot of people speculate that out of that dysfunction came this idea, you know, that we just sort of see things differently and we allow others to see things differently. And so in the 1970s, It was really out of a concern to protect farm and forest land that folks before me established this urban growth boundary for which we are not allowed to grow beyond, except under certain conditions, and the nation's strongest, toughest land use laws. We're a city of about 570,000 people. In terms of planning, we've really tried to, as you have, focus along corridors, protecting single-family neighborhoods and focusing growth in the areas along transit corridors or transit-appropriate corridors for future transit, and show folks the amenities that go along with that. All right, multimodalism, tough word to pronounce, but it is what we believe in Portland. The American culture is marinated with a love for the car, a love for the automobile. A lot of our economy is wrapped up in a successful domestic automobile industry, which right now is, you know, in pretty bad shape. So I think enlightened leaders in the United States do not try to get Americans to consider taking trips other than driving alone in their car. We do not seek to do that by making Americans feel guilty. Instead, we try to provide them options that they actually want to act on in terms of one or more of their trips in a given day, week, or month. And so in terms of multimodalism, the idea, and that's the notion of networks and of corridors that connect 20-minute neighborhoods, is really key to what I see and others see for the future of Portland. What's a 20-minute neighborhood? A 20-minute neighborhood means that you can get what you need and want on a daily basis and a weekly basis within a 20-minute walk or bike ride from your home. And we're in the process right now of analyzing how many of our homes fall into the category right now of a 20-minute neighborhood. Portland, as is Vancouver, is a city that was built around streetcar system. And so the corner grocery store without parking, that actually carries what you would want to buy on a daily and weekly basis, a corner grocery store that does not have parking, that is in your neighborhood, that carries what you actually want to buy at a price that you think is comparable to driving across town to a bigger box or to some other kind of grocery store, is key to the 20-minute neighborhood. And what does that mean? As transportation commissioner for the city of Portland, and we have a strange former government, I'm an elected transportation commissioner and also mayor, it means that maybe perhaps the best transportation investment I could make would be to procure a grocery store site, maybe in an old house on the corner like they used to be, and some still do exist in the city of Portland, to make sure that the rental costs of that site allow for a successful business, to make sure that the surrounding 20 minutes walking distance and biking distance from that corner grocery store in the old house on the corner, that we invest in a market analysis of what those folks actually want to buy, and that we might actually consider subsidizing the cost of making sure that the goods that the folks that live around that old-timey grocery store can procure those items, again, what they want at a price that they think is fair and commensurate with the across-town market grocery store competitors. That might be the best possible transportation investment for the city of Portland. Strange, isn't it? A transportation department that does a consumer market analysis that might be obtaining a lease or a rental agreement for an old, dwelling on a corner somewhere without parking That would be subsidizing the rent of a private operator to provide amenities, basic consumer amenities. That might be a staging point for the drop off of boxes and FedEx and your laundry. That might be one of the best transportation investments that Portland might make. You're right. It is. Could be. Two-thirds of Portland's trips are not about driving from home to work. Two-thirds of our trips are not about driving home to work. Most of those trips are about procuring stuff. My transportation department is, their eyes spin when I talk like this, let me tell you.
This is Radio Equishock. You are listening to a speech about livable cities by one of America's greenest mayors, Sam Adams of Portland.
All right. What needs to connect those 20-minute neighborhoods? We're not going to have a streetcar. We call them streetcars. They're called trams. That's in the upper right. The lower right are light or what we call light rail. Not every little grocery store is going to be connected by a streetcar or light rail. We just don't have the money, and it would be the wrong kind of connections to make. But neighborhoods in the city of Portland over the next 25 years will be connected by streetcar and light rail. The light rail corridors are those corridors that when you look beyond the city limits of Portland, when we need to connect the corridors beyond the city of Portland, those are the corridors that will be prioritized for light rail. Within the city of Portland, those are the corridors that will be connected by streetcar. I'll talk a little bit more about streetcar. We spent $125 million on 8 miles of streetcar during the George Bush years. There was no federal funding for streetcar. Then we had a local congressman who got legislation passed through the U.S. Congress that created a whole new pot of money to fund local streetcar projects. And the Bush administration wouldn't let any of that money out of that fund for streetcars. So we spent $125 million in local money. We raised on-street parking meter revenues. We raised the public garage parking fees. And we used that money and what we call tax increment money to put together a pool of funding of about $125 million through the central city of Portland. And it is some of the best investment, some of the best money we ever spent. Because within three blocks of that 8 mile stretch of streetcar, we had $3.5 billion in private investment. In fact, 55% of all the new housing in the central city of Portland happened within those three blocks of streetcar. Light rail stops about every 2 miles. It moves people fast, and it's good for connecting a region. Streetcar stops every 2 miles, and it's good for creating the kind of activated landscape that we want, activated streetscape that we want, and it's good for, it's development-oriented transit. Nothing else that we spend money on gets the kind of private sector response as streetcar does. Transit ridership in the city of Portland since 1989, when we got serious about it, is up 100% when we got serious. We have hills like you have hills. We connected it with a tram, probably the most controversial transit investment the city of Portland ever made. Initially, it was estimated to cost $15 million. The actual price of construction came in at $57 million. I would not recommend that you do a lot of these. I know you have some. You have one already. And it has unlocked redevelopment opportunities that we couldn't have done any other way. It is a corridor in the air between a hill where our major research and university hospital is, down near the water. Upper left shows that you can barely see the in the upper left. That was all abandoned industrial area that now becomes an extension of our university research hospital. So for that, it has been a fantastic thing. But it has also proven to be very expensive. Why do we think about 20-minute neighborhoods? Why do we think about having them connected with these green multimodal corridors? Regional Rail is another example. I don't know who that guy is on the right. He looks like a real boy. In part, we were thinking this way because we've done a lot of research in the last 3 years. Portland has the highest per capita trips by bicycle than any city in the United States. And yet, we're at about 5% citywide. In the downtown retail district, the central business core, it's about 12%. And every time we expand the bike network, we see an exponential increase in bike riders. You expand it a mile, you know, and you'll see, you know, a 300% increase in biking. We spend a lot of time in Europe. We're about to build our first cycle tracks, if you know what those are. And I have a proposal for $24 million to build 110 miles of bike boulevards. And the reason that I would, even though everyone's cutting budgets, I'm proposing to spend $24 million on 110 miles of bike boulevards is that we've done, as I mentioned, a lot of polling and a lot of research. And when we asked Portlanders, and again, Portland is one of the most liberal cities in the United States, where people describe us as the People's Republic of Portland. We had more people vote for Obama as a percentage than I think any other major city in the United States. We had the largest rally for Obama. I mean, we're liberal. We're progressive. But we still only have 5% of our trips by bicycle. You know, that's, you know, and we go to Copenhagen and we go to Stockholm and, you know, they sneer at us because, you know, they have, you know, I don't know, 90% of all their trips are by bikes, or one would believe that, you know, by their attitude. And I love them, and it's wonderful, but I just want to get our bike ridership up. So we spent a lot of money and time over the past 3 years asking Portlanders that don't ride their bikes what it would take. At the same time, I'm looking to put a ballot measure on the ballot that would try to increase funding for transportation. And we gave him a list of 27 items, if we had more money, that we could invest in. At the very, very bottom in the People's Republic of Portland was, not him, sorry, was spend more money on bikes and spend more money on freight. And it really hurt the feelings of both the freight advocates and the bike advocates that they were vying for the bottom of the public's sort of priority list. And it kind of flummoxed a bunch of us because in the focus groups we did, we asked folks, what do they think makes Portland unique? And they talked about the bike culture, and they talked about that light rail and streetcar. And so it was strange that it would be ranked so low, and yet in the focus groups it seemed to be, even by non-bike riders, even by non-transit riders, to be sort of a part of what makes Portland quirky and unique. And then we asked a question, we did more research and found out that, we asked the question if, in terms of the 27 items, we went back and asked a different list, and one of the items on the list was, would you invest more money in bike boulevards, I think you call bikeways, and bike boulevards, that's the quiet adjacent street to the really busy streets that prioritize for bicyclists. It includes barricades so bikes can go through but cars cannot go through. I mean, a really good system of getting, you know, still having the bike lanes on the busy streets for the last block or two blocks, but bike boulevards. We asked Portlanders if they would spend more money on removing the conflict between the bikes and the cars by investing in these bike boulevards. And it came out number three after fixing two bridges across our main river that are rated really low, you know, among the lowest. It came out basically after the bridges as the top item that Portlanders wanted to fund. And the lesson for us there was that people that drive cars exclusively are scared to death that they're going to hit a bicyclist. And people that don't ride bikes are scared to death that they're going to be hit by the cars. Both of them want the same thing. They want to see more bikers on the quieter streets. Again, we're not going to shift our bike infrastructure off the busy streets because that's important as well, but we're going to get more bike riders if we expand our bike boulevard network, and that's what we're going to do here. This is the Bike Boulevard Network that we're building in the city of Portland. And again, it's some of the best investments in transportation infrastructure I can get away with. And I've got, you know, the city of the Portland region is the third most trade-dependent city in the United States, which means that with our port, our inland port, we're very dependent on freight, so I have to invest a lot in freight to keep freight moving quickly. But in terms of reducing congestion and making sure that, you know, that people have healthy options and reliable trip times and affordable ways of mobility, the bicycle network that we're building here in terms of lanes, boulevards, and trails, that is a high priority for me. And even if you never get on a bike in the city of Portland, Oregon, you should be very, very supportive of our investment in these areas because it reduces congestion and air pollution and keeps your neighbors healthy. So that's part of that corridor, that multimodal sort of network of corridors that we're seeking to connect between our 20-minute neighborhoods. We have 20,000 people in our bridge pedal every year, and we use this shamelessly as a way to get there's a big percentage of people. We shut down the eight bridges or parts of the eight bridges in the city of Portland every year, and it's our shameless way to get people out. There's a high percentage of people that bike once a year at this bridge pedal once a year, and we shamelessly use it as a way to get more information and also to market them on the bike and pedestrian option and transit options to and from their neighborhoods. Our Smart Trips options, which are built on the best practices in Australia, is a door-to-door effort that is like a concierge for folks that have never considered or been afraid to consider or didn't think it was realistic for a variety of reasons to consider anything other than driving to work and back or to get their basic necessities, entertainment, or what their mobility requirements in the city of Portland are except any other way except driving alone. We've had a lot of success on that, and we use our bridge pedal as a way to market to those folks. I'd like to remind Portlanders that our accomplishments in the area of climate change, our accomplishments in the area of sustainability should inspire us to do more. And we get written up a lot in the national press, and I'm, on behalf of Portlanders, very proud of that, although I remind Portlanders we need to be very humble because within the United States that is high praise on an incredibly low standard, very low standard. We have not had a federal government that has prioritized transit investments, that have cared much about cities, much less about bikes and pedestrian issues. We have had to fight and claw our way to, when we get these dollars, to invest them in projects that are intended most always for the car. And so as good as Portland is, and I'm proud to be the mayor of Portland, it is high praise on a very low standard. And we need to be humble in that knowledge and keep pushing forward. Portland was one of the first cities in the United States to establish a climate action plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, not by me, but by a predecessor on the Portland City Council. And we're one of the few cities in the United States and the world that has actually not only reduced our per capita emissions of greenhouse gas, but have actually reduced our greenhouse gas emissions by 1%. Based on 1990 levels. We've done that in the same way that you do a lot of your best work up here in terms of focusing on complete neighborhoods, density, compact growth, mixed-use neighborhoods, mixed-income neighborhoods. We spend a lot of money on affordable housing. We've now just last week set a new goal for ourselves that I think we join in the goals that have already been set by Seattle, San Francisco, and your city. It's exciting to be able to consider more aggressive reductions in greenhouse gas and more, you know, positive aspirations on climate change with the new administration that not only has a that actually believes that climate change is a real risk, but actually knows on the, you know, again, the U.S. federal level that cities do exist and that they need some focus and they need some investments. The last 8 years of the Bush administration have been incredibly punishing on the issues of sustainability, but they've also been incredibly punishing for cities. And it's nice to have a new president that knows the importance of both cities and the need to focus on this. This is our goal. By 2050, an 80% reduction in emissions. And by 2030, our interim goal is 40%. Our 2030, we have 2030 objectives and 2012 objectives that are very concrete. We're out for 3 months of public comment. You can go to mayorsamadams.com to download the science behind it and to download the draft objectives. We're about to hold 12 town halls throughout Portland that will go over each of the 8 action areas. And what's been important to me as you talk about, again, about the 20-minute neighborhoods and the corridors of multimodal, green corridors of multimodal connections, is to get it down to the individual neighborhood level. You know, to get it down to the individual household level eventually, but at least the neighborhood level and the business district level, so that everyone in Portland knows how we're doing in terms of the geographic areas of the city. 2003 household expenditures, and this is the added benefit, 2003 household expenditures on transportation by metropolitan area, the city of Portland spends about less than 20% than the average city in the United States on transportation. Again, it goes back to, I don't try to browbeat people or guilt trip Portlanders into, you know, carry your reusable bag, never use your car, you know, wear a hair shirt, don't take a bath, you know, reduce the carbon footprint. And at least in my country, you don't get very far with that. But what I can pitch them on to get to the same goal, and again, consistent with the climate action plan, is I can save you money. And I can make Portland more economically competitive with the approaches that I've talked about tonight and that you here in Vancouver are seeking to implement. Portland drives in their car about 20% less than the average big cities in the United States. And that leads to a region-wide reduction of about $800 million that we don't spend on cars. Portland doesn't manufacture cars. We don't have oil wells. We're not the headquarters for a lot of auto insurance companies. And so Portlanders spend a net $800 million every year less than the average American city. That's money in the pockets of Portland households, and that makes the money that $800 million that is spent on other things than the car, it makes Portland's economy that much more resilient. It circulates in the local economy. Every dollar spent in the local economy returns 64 cents versus a dollar spent on things like cars, which is, I think it's about 37 cents. So the way I approach these issues is there's a certain percentage of the population that will get the green message and just go with it, and that's all they need. But there's a bigger percentage of the population where I need to make a number of different arguments, again, to realize this notion that Portlanders can have as good or better life than they have now. They can be more prosperous than they are right now. They can be healthier. And they can have a better neighborhood than they have right now. And that's with this approach of a 20-minute neighborhood and the multimodal corridor connections. In the end, Portlanders value their quality of life very, very much, just like you do here in Vancouver. And that's what we work on. Not only, and we're working, to translate that into satisfaction. So the numbers are good in terms of prosperity. The numbers are good in terms of, you know, reduction in carbon emissions and all this stuff. But in the end, it's about quality of life. And that's really speaking to people sort of where they're at right now and speaking to them in terms and motivating them in terms that seems very meaningful to them.
That was Sam Adams, Mayor of Portland, recorded at a Shifting Gears event, sponsored in part by the University of British Columbia and Simon Fraser University. Sam is part of a club of green mayors growing up all over the United States and Canada. Despite the collapse of municipal bond markets now and falling tax revenues, it still looks like local action is the only way forward. That means you and me. Planning meetings and local politics used to be as boring as dishwater, but now it's the best route to survivable towns and to cities that are safe for humans. I hope you will get active where you live. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Find links to all the resources mentioned in this program in my blog entry for May 14th, 2009. This is Radio EcoShock. Light up your iPod or computer with tons of free green audio from our website at www.ecoshock.org. That's ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org.